You're with Mike Ryan on today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
Yes, the hump day of the week. It means we only have two more days to go before the weekend. Not that I'm looking forward to the weekend. It all sort of melds into each other. Hope your day is going absolutely fantastically well. Now, Russia is going to probe suspicious activity by Red Cross. We know that some of these organisations are under attack. Just look at the floods here. A lot of things are brought up about various organisations purporting to do some charitable work. Well, the Ukrainian branch of the Red Cross allegedly catalogued children with healthy organs. You can't get a whole lot more sicker than that. The Russian Investigative Committee said on Sunday it will look into allegations the Ukrainian Red Cross Society was involved in shady activities, including keeping records of children with healthy organs in the city of Mariupol. Mariupol. Oh, you know, I can't say that word. It's terrible. Help me out, Tim. Can you say it? No, he can't. He can't say it either. Mariupol. There you are. I've said it. Mariupol. Now, Kiev has prevented ships from exporting grain by mining its own ports, Moscow says. Russia is not preventing ships from transporting grain out of the Ukraine. Foreign Minister Lavrov said on Tuesday, and Western claims to the contrary are part of a smear campaign that will do nothing to solve the global food crisis. The only party actually preventing ships from using Ukrainian ports and exporting grain by sea is Ukraine itself, he added, because it deployed sea mines that have made navigation unsafe. And in the UK, credit card borrowing in April rose at the fastest annual rate in nearly two decades, according to data released by the Bank of England on Tuesday. The regulator revealed the spending on cards was 11.6% higher than last April, making the biggest increase since November 2005, while overall consumer credit rose by 5.7% year on year, the fastest growth since February 2020. The housing market, meanwhile, has slowed, not like Australia, which is just about ready to implode, with people taking up fewer mortgages and approvals for house purchases decreasing. It shows the economic storm clouds are getting darker by the day. People can take out credit and loans if they are confident, but at the moment it doesn't look all that great for the world, because we seem to be heading down a slippery slope, to say the least. Coming up next, Greg Mabry.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Propaganda swirl about, but things, are they changing? Well, maybe they are, but not in Australia. More about that in a moment. In Ukraine, maybe that's why Zelensky, the puppet, has been warning of the threat to the lives of Americans if Russia wins. We'll talk about that and a lot more with Greg Mabry, who's a Perth-based freelance writer, alternative media aggregator and blogger. His writing appears on a diverse range of alternative and independent news sites here in Australia and the US. Greg's major areas of interest include the neoliberal and neoconservative influence on US policy formulation, the COVID pandemic and related matters, and you can find Greg's work on Substack and on Telegram. Greg Mabry, as they say in the classics, it's all happening, isn't it?
It's unstoppable, Mike. It's unstoppable. It's very difficult for us people to try and keep up with what's happening. I've all but given up trying to keep up with everything. I just try and focus on a few things these days, and that seems to work a little bit better. It does mean, of course, that a few things sort of slip under the radar, but then again, I've got a few people out there that are very good at kind of, you know, bringing things to my attention, so that works out well, including yourself, I might add.
Mm-hmm. Look, by the way, What's happening in WA? I mean, from today it says 60% of employed Western Australians will have been required to have their third jab. Fill us in on what's happening around that. It sounds a bit like a dog's dinner. Is that about right?
Oh, look, I don't know if I could find better words to describe it all, Mike. And again, I'm not suggesting that WA has cornered the market on the dog's breakfast. But be that as it may, you know, I live here, and of course, this is the state which I, you know, obviously the rules and regulations that go down here affect me and my family and my friends and what have you more so. And that's where you kind of, all of us sort of feel it is in our local communities and our local areas and in our local businesses as well. And you know, where we work. So as far as what's happening in WA, there was an announcement and that just a friend of mine sent through to me this morning that, for example, they're rescinding the mandates on vaccinations for certain jobs. Now, that actually applies to me in that I used to do a little bit of, you know, teaching work just from time to time, just to kind of, you know, keep my hand in as well as, you know, pulling a bit of extra dollars. But I rang the health department this morning just to make some inquiries as to, you know, what exactly press release was all about. You know, the Premier got out there and said, yeah, okay, we're going to remove the mandates for vaccination. And the health department said, yes, that will be coming into effect on June the 10th. But the from what I can understand is that employers will still be able to decide whether they employ people who are unvaccinated or not. Now, so that's the situation as far as I know. I rang a couple of schools that I normally have dealings with. One school didn't seem to be overly worried about whether I was vaccinated or not. Another school said no, that I had to be triple vaxxed with a booster. So there you go. I mean, and it remains to be seen how that will play out. And of course, it's not just in the education profession. There'll be all sorts of professions and all sorts of people who have been put out of work or simply just haven't been able to work because of the mandates. They'll also, I suppose, be sort of, you know, making frantic phone calls today just to find out what's going on and what their status is. So, again, describing it as a dog's breakfast is definitely, you know, one way of putting it. And I guess, Mike, really at the end of the day, should we expect anything less from these people, you know, in terms of, you know, they're making policy on the run. And, you know, it just leaves people in a state of not just confusion, but also, too, a certain amount of stress involved. And, you know, I just don't know when it's all going to end. It really is, you know, it's great that they've actually, you know, rescinded the mandates. But then who knows, another month, 6 weeks down the track, this monkey pox that they keep talking about gains traction, the money pox, as it's often called, that gains traction. Who knows, we could be back to square one with masks and social distancing and a new round of vaccination requirements. I mean, it's just impossible to tell.
You know, it's really interesting, isn't it? You think about, I mean, we're talking about, you know, well, inverted commas, educated people looking at the education system. They seem to be almost the leaders of the dimwits. That's a new band that has 10 million people part of it. But that's what it seems like. And it's it's interesting that the real virus is what it's called the low IQ virus, and it seems to attack, you know, one, the morals, and two, the intelligence of people globally. I'll play you this.
COVID vaccine boosters are now available for children 5 and older, but with kids about to get out of school for summer, some parents want to know, is this the best time to get your children boosted? CBS 17's Maggie Newland is getting answers for us tonight on that. Maggie.
Well, Rod, I've spoken with several parents who want to get their children boosted, but they want to know whether to go ahead and do that now or whether they should get it closer to the end of summer when kids are about to head back to school. I took that question to two infectious disease experts. As the school year winds down, families are thinking about summer plans. And if your children got their COVID shots at least 5 months ago, Triangle infectious disease specialists recommend those plans include booster shots.
No one should wait to get a booster. If you are eligible for a booster, please get it this week.
UNC infectious disease expert Dr. David Wohl says there's no reason to wait until fall, especially with COVID cases rising.
Why wait to get vaccinated for a surge that may or may not happen when we're in the midst of a surge right now?
While kids may not be in school all summer, most are involved in other activities.
I think most of us on our summer break also have our kids in large clusters of friends and families or camps or any number of different things.
That's why Duke infectious disease expert Dr. Cameron Wolf says he also recommends getting kids boosted as soon as they're eligible.
I think now is a good time because we see both our rates starting to go up again. And, you know, most summers are spent with lots of kids mingling around and perhaps different circles of friends than might have been traditionally mixing in a school environment.
Vaccinate your kids for sure before summer activities. This is the time you want that protection.
Currently, 25% of children ages 5 to 11 in North Carolina are fully vaccinated. Again, children are eligible for a booster 5 months after their second shot.
So, Greg, we see the education system along with the corrupt medical industrial complex, but we see them saying to get your protection, get the shot. Now, sorry, but you're a teacher. Which part doesn't marry with the other bit? A protection? Because it doesn't protect you.
It doesn't protect us. The same thing with the masks, the social distancing, all of that stuff has proven to be, you know, ineffective, not to mention the vaccinations. They don't prevent transmission or acquisition of the actual disease. And of course, as we both know, and listeners to this radio show, listen to your station, will know well and truly the extraordinary adverse events, as they call them. In other words, the serious or deadly side effects of these drugs. And of course, now in that snippet that you just played me of the, you know, they're just waxing lyrical about, you know, vaccinating kids. There's no discussion at all about the impacts that the vaccinations are having on adults, let alone, you know, how that's going to pan out with increasing numbers of younger people now being vaccinated across the board. It's all about preventing transmission. It's all about preventing people from catching COVID. It's just nobody's talking about the elephant in the room, Mike, you know, and this is what puzzles me. Getting back to teachers, I'm not sure that teachers really are any more stupid or less stupid than other people when it comes to understanding, you know, what we're actually up against here. But I think what people don't realise that the teaching profession is an actually very conservative profession. You know, the teachers aren't a radical group of people. They're not ones to go against the grain or to stand out from the crowd. They simply, the profession just simply does not allow for that. You know, the education hierarchies do not allow for that. And I guess it's probably not dissimilar to the health profession as well, you know, that people have to play a certain role within certain boundaries. And, you know, I just, you know, with the situation with schools, I haven't been in a school now, Mike, for over 12 months, so I don't really know, or haven't been able to sort of check out the lay of the land. I can only go on what I hear from, you know, a couple of other teachers that I have contact with. But generally speaking, the schools show no sign whatsoever, and nor do the parents either of the kids that go to these schools show any sign of understanding what the real agenda here is. It's still all about, oh, we've got to get vaccinated to avoid catching COVID. And we really just haven't moved on from that part of the conversation 2.5 years down the track. I just despair sometimes as to where, you know, the conversation is going and what it will actually take for people to really wake up. And I think I've said this for some time now, I really think the only thing that is going to wake people up is when their kids start becoming seriously ill from the effects of the vaccines, not seriously ill from some virus, whether it's COVID or monkeypox or something like that. And I'm just hopeful, probably hoping against hope, that that there will be some kind of a realization at some point in time that there is something drastically wrong with this whole narrative, and that we've been led down the path and we've been sold a bill of goods. And, you know, I suspect also teachers are probably caught, like everybody else, they're just caught in the middle, just like, you know, most other people.
I agree, but as a teacher, you must just shake your head and roll the eyes back, because you taught people how to think for themselves.
Well, Mike, that's an interesting thing that you're talking about, critical thinking skill. Okay,
all right. It doesn't exist, does it now?
That went out the window 25 years ago. The curriculum really doesn't embrace that kind of skill. Even our teachers, the current generation of teachers, they have been brought up in an education system which didn't teach them critical thinking skills. I at least, you know, grew up in an age where, you know, we were sort of taught some basic rudimentary critical thinking skills, and I probably developed a few along the way, you know, over at, in the School of Hard Knocks after the regular school. But look, no, critical thinking skills, and I've written about this as well too, is that, you know, to me, I use the phrase critical thinking skills are the opposable thumb of the mind, you know, and, you know, without that, we can't expect that people are going to be able to sit down and remove themselves from the barrage of propaganda that just completely engulfs us day in and day out, and sit back and just ask ourselves a few basic questions about what's actually going on here, because there are so many anomalies, so many inconsistencies in the whole COVID narrative that it leaves most of us sort of shaking our heads and wondering, why is it that people can't bring to bear those critical thinking skills? Well, the reason why is that they're not really taught to do that at school. And on top of that, of course, you've got this constant barrage of propaganda telling us this, telling us that, this is what you've got to do, this is what you've got to do here. And that, of course, has been extraordinarily prevalent in the last 2.5 years. And, you know, it just seems to me as if, you know, without those critical thinking skills that we, you know, that we would all like to think that we have, most of us, even if we do have those critical thinking skills, don't seem to apply them. And it's as if in the last 2.5 years, they've definitely gone AWOL. And, you know, and I get very, very frustrated. And oftentimes it's mostly, interestingly, some of my friends and familiars are the most educated ones that have bought the narrative. I've got quite a few friends who left school at sort of, you know, mid-year in year 10. So they didn't really go on to complete high school. And they're not academics. They would never call themselves intellectual people, or, you know, but these people do think for themselves. And I don't know what it is. And maybe it's because they left school a little bit earlier and got out in the real world and experienced life a little bit, they were able to sort of, you know, put a few things together. I don't know. I don't really know the answer to that. But certainly, to me, propaganda is the biggest offender. It really just, and on top of that, you've got not just propaganda, Mike, you've got what I call its evil twin. And that evil twin, of course, is the censorship that goes on. And people just don't realise just how much of the information that we crucially need to get is actually censored. So propaganda and censorship go hand in hand. People talk about propaganda a lot. They perhaps don't talk so much about censorship. And I've written about this, I wrote about this just recently. In fact, I posted something on my Substack page the other day about propaganda and censorship, and how that kind of muddles the whole picture that is presented to us about our reality. I always sort of like to say that, perception is about 9/10 of reality. I don't know if you ever heard the phrase, possession was 9/10 of the law. Mm-hmm. This was a phrase that I used to hear when I was a kid. Well, you can actually sort of transpose that phrase and say perception is 9/10 of our reality. And we get most of our perception of things via the media, not only via what they tell us and what they think we should know, but we also get our perception of the world via what they don't tell us or what they choose to hide from us or what they choose to distort. And put the two together, and I guess even somebody with the most acute critical thinking skills is going to struggle to take the time out on any given day to sit back and say, okay, well, what happened today and how can I kind of process all of that? It becomes very difficult for most people, even the most intelligent, aware people, to really sit down and go, right, how can I process this and how can I come away with something that really gives me a sense of what we're dealing with here? Mm. Most people aren't doing it, Mike. Most people don't have the time. Even if they have got the inclination, they've then got to find the time to do that. And it's difficult, you know. It's difficult, even for somebody like me.
Mm. We'll talk more about this sort of stuff. And I have one of the hypocrite, is what I'm trying to say, hypocrite quotes of the week coming up. Need your opinion on that one. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
Where it's almost like it's the devil's own award sermon. You know, they're demons rewarding demons with prizes, you know. A hotter spot in hell for the best and most effective vaccine. You know, Pfizer got this and Moderna got that. That's what it is, you know. That's really what it is. If people could actually see what this is, if they had eyes to see, they would see what this is. It's not something that's beneficial to the world. And this business of this plan that you talked about as well, and I concur 100%, it's not a case of, okay, you get your two shots, we're done with you. No, this is going to be a constant, regular thing. Do not fall for the lie that was told 2 years ago. Like, you take your two shots, you've stepped up to the plate, you're a patriot, you'll be safe, you won't transmit, everyone can go back to normal. No, you need your first booster shot, you need your second booster shot, you're going to need an annual shot with a flu shot, your children are going to have to get these shots even though there's no risk to them.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swinging in reason.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke.
at salemnow.com.
Think tsunamis only happen somewhere else? Think again. Tsunamis happen when ocean water is displaced by an earthquake or other large undersea disturbance. Plan to act. If you are near the coast and feel a quake, hear the ocean roar, or see the water recede significantly, a tsunami may be approaching. Get moving. Go inland and up to safety. For more information, visit tsunami.gov.
TNT Radio presents The World Has Gone Nuts and Where the Hypocrites Roam Free. Thank you.
Pleasure. See, we train them young, Greg. I mean, but maybe it went to your school.
It could have been one of my former students.
Mm, they could have been. Although the you never know. Now, I played that because, well, remember we used to sit in front of the TV until we all realised that they were telling us lies. And Dr. Dreamy, Australia's version, Nick Coatsworth, would come on and say, get jabbed, get jabbed, get jabbed, get jabbed, get jabbed, get jabbed.
So you've just had the flu. Had you had the vaccine?
You know what, Ali? I'm going to have to admit to our viewers around Australia that I gave you the vaccine, gave Charles the vaccine, and then I didn't get the vaccine myself.
Isn't that terrible? I mean, a great hypocrite.
Yeah, I was just, well, it was a part of me that was, the only thing that really surprised me about that, Mike, was the fact that he openly admitted it on live television. And the question we have to ask is how many other of our, not just health or medical authorities, but politicians and other people who have been out there promoting the whole COVID narrative, how many of these people have actually had the jab and or have declined to take it or have found some way around it? I think he's probably just the tip of the iceberg, this guy.
Mm. I think look at the CDC, 400 of their employees, guess what, never got the jibby jab. What about the CEO of Pfizer? What's his name? Buffett or something?
Albert Bourla.
Oh, not Buffett. Sorry, I was wrong about
Bourla. Yeah.
That's right. But he, I don't need it. I don't need it. I'm healthy. I'm 59. I don't need it. I mean, that's what it's isn't it?
And I read the other day as well too that selected staff at Pfizer have been exempt from the vax. Now, again, I don't know whether that's true or not, but it certainly would not, none of that would surprise me. But Albert Bourla's a very interesting character, that's to say the least. To me, he's no question about it, he was a criminal.
Mm.
But I don't know if you probably would have picked up on a bit of a furore about Albert Bourla since we're on the subject of him and Pfizer. He was engaging in a chin wag with Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum this week, and somebody chopped up their video discussion. And Albert Bourla was talking about how Pfizer, being the sort of benign philanthropic organisation that it is, talking about how Pfizer were going to be giving away a lot of its medicines to third world countries or to developing countries that couldn't afford their medicines. And he was making a big deal of it one of these discussions, in one of these forums situations at the World Economic Forum. Somebody got hold of the video and chopped it up and made it sound like they're trying to reduce the world population by 50%, when in actual fact he was saying that what we're trying to do is reduce the cost of medicines by 50% to all of these people. And it, I don't know if you saw it or not, Mike, but it did the rounds quite a bit, and it got people's knickers in quite a bit of a knot. A lot of people bought into it and thought that it was real. As far as I can gather, it wasn't. That his original announcement was that they were trying to their aim was to reduce the cost of medicines to developing countries. So on the face of it, his announcement was, you know, fairly benign and a fairly benign sort of an action. But at the end of the day, it really didn't matter, because Pfizer is a criminal organization. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no question that it is a criminal organization. That's a matter of public record. And he is a criminal. This is a man who has gone out there. The revelations from the trials that they did with the Pfizer vaccines, you only need to have a cursory look at some of the reports. As you well know, and probably quite a few of the listeners will know, you only have to look at some of those reports from the trials that Pfizer conducted, and not just Pfizer, the other big companies as well, to know that they have engaged in a massive fraud. And that ultimately, hopefully, will be the thing that actually brings them unstuck, because they're, as most people know, the drug companies themselves, they have immunity from prosecution from any negative results from the vaccines. But my understanding is, and fellows like Edward Dowd and a few others have made this statement as well, that if it can be proved that the drug companies misrepresented the data from these trials, then that is fraud, and that actually then negates any kind of immunity that they ever had that was given to them as a result.
Yeah, look, we're having a few hiccups here at the moment. We'll go to Tim, should we go to a commercial break? I think we should.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The declining approval rating of President Joe Biden is a big warning sign for Democratic Party candidates for the November midterm elections. Reuters Ipsos poll for the 25th of May has Biden's approval rating at an all-time low of 36% and disapproval at 59%. Biden has reportedly become exasperated, with poll after poll showing his approval rating dropping below the lowest levels recorded by his predecessor, Donald Trump. Biden is reportedly eyeing a major shakeup of his leadership team in a desperate attempt to win back the American public. This will merely be shifting the deck chairs on the Titanic. The problem for the Democrats is that most of their candidates stubbornly push woke propaganda and so-called progressive economic policies. This does not play out in the real world when the political spin does not address the population's immediate needs. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And my guest is, he's on planet Earth and went to some faraway galaxy. He's now landed back in Perth. It's amazing what space travel can do. Greg, are you back on planet Earth?
I believe so, yes.
And you sound much better. I mean, truly, it was starting to sound very much like Albanese.
Please, Mike, spare me.
Hey, just thinking about the vaccines and the uptake of the booster. Tim is one of our producers here. Tim, are they? Do you know if the booster in your circle of very large circle of friends too, being ever so popular?
Stop it!
I can't help it. But has it been the uptake? Has it been there, or are they saying no? After two, we're not going to do it anymore.
Well, I think what's happened is in Australia we had the big wave of the Omicron variant around January, February, and that was after the majority of people had had their two shots, but it was before they were eligible to get the boost. And I think what happened was most people had Omicron and realized, oh, don't know what the fuss is about. This isn't half as bad as I thought it was. And then aren't bothering to have the booster because they have had the firsthand experience of COVID and have decided, you know, it's not worth, it's not that risky to actually get COVID. So they'd rather go, just go without it.
Greg, so if that's the case, and then you find in these terrible states, WA, Victoria, Queensland, South Australia now because they've gone communist, if you have that, you know, if you believe what Tim's saying, what happens to these states? I mean, these people aren't going to have the booster. So do they just let it just sort of flit away like the flu shot that some got, some didn't? Do they just let that happen, or do you think they'll come down heavy on it?
I think probably just need to go back a little bit. And I've always had serious doubts about, you know, the advertised vaccination rates. I mean, I have no way of knowing. I don't think any of us have any way of knowing. But I think it's fair to say they've overstated so much about this whole COVID pandemic. There's no question in my mind that they would have and are still probably continuing to overstate the number of people who've had first, second, third and vaxxers and then boosters. So I think really, getting back to Tim's comment, I would definitely say there's not only COVID fatigue out there, there is vaccination fatigue out there, that people have just had enough of it. And I think especially now, given that they're continuing to push the vaccination for kids, at some point in time, people have to start wondering, you know, just how serious this all is and how seriously should we take it. So a little bit hard to know, Mike, what's going to transpire in that respect, really.
The hot of the press, sizzling hot. Now, women under 40 are increasingly dying of a sudden killer disease. A campaigner has warned blood clots can occur in people of any age and strike those who seem to be fit and healthy. So we have now another byproduct of most likely the injection, not vaccine, the injection. And as we go along, because it's still a trial, all sorts of things most likely will happen. That's part of a trial, isn't it? Yet we've jumped headlong into it. I try not to be a miserable person, and at times people laugh at my jokes, but I cannot see a great future. And I think there's going to be problems after problems. And back to what you said at the start of the show, when do people acknowledge, have one and one equals two and not three or four?
I'll take that as a question, Mike.
Yes, please.
I ask myself that question every day. I'm sure many people do, whether it's people like ourselves who are working in the media or just ordinary regular folks who are just out there trying to get on with their lives and have some sense that something isn't quite right, whether they had that sense right from the word go or whether that was something that evolved over a period of time. But one of the great things that puzzles me is that we have actually been involved in the longest and the largest medical experiment in history. There is no question in my mind that experiment, as you already indicated, is still ongoing. And people haven't really quite grasped that that's actually what we are dealing. That's what we are being exposed to. That's what we are being subjected to, is the largest medical experiment. And clearly the ill effects of this experiment, they're out there for everybody to see. The records daily I keep getting updates on people dying suddenly. You mentioned one particular category, women over 40, having blood clots and various things like that. I expect that eventually that age group, you talk about people just, you know, under 50 or over 40, whatever that, in that particular demographic, that demographic is going to get lower and lower and lower. I hate to say that, but, you know, really, I think we've got to accept given what we know now about the adverse events or the side effects of these vaccines, given what the damage that they've already done in people's lives, given how many people they have killed, and looking at and listening to the media and watching the media and looking at how very little of this particular aspect of the whole COVID debate is discussed in the mainstream media, and even just when you're talking with people, nobody that I talk to, or very few people that I talk to, seem to realise exactly what's at stake here. They don't seem to realise that, in fact, this experiment that we've been subjected to has wreaked disaster in people's lives, and it's going to be ongoing, and we haven't even reached the point of where people are just starting to turn. I can't even see that people are starting to turn on that at the moment. There still just seems to be this acceptance that everything is hunky-dory, that, okay, we've been placed in turmoil for the last 2 years, we're going to get through this. I just sort of feel that at some point in time, people have to wake up. But like you, I get very pessimistic sometimes. Mm. I really do. It
gets very depressing, and I sometimes don't know. You just sit there and you go, well, what do we do next? Because, I mean, contrary to what people are thinking or hoping, the world really is not opening up. It's becoming more controlling as the day goes by. But talking about this trial that we're still in, and by the way, even when the trial finishes, it's not done properly because it's a joke. The whole thing is a joke. But there's been a spike in neonatal death rates, and this is Mark Stein with Dr. Naomi Wolf.
Quite often these days, I'll see a story that appears rather startling. For example, this from the Glasgow Herald a fortnight back. Quote, an investigation has been launched into a very unusual spike in deaths among newborn babies in Scotland for the second time in just 6 months. The alarm was raised after 18 infants died within 4 weeks of birth in March, causing the mortality rate to breach an upper warning threshold known as the control limit, which signals a potential problem. Dead babies used to be something that got our attention, but now spikes in deaths of newborns every 3 to 6 months make the papers for a day, the local papers, and then go away. Except that a few days later, I'll see Naomi Wolf on the other side of the Atlantic gnawing away at the forgotten Scottish story, trying to make sense of it and fit it into the larger picture, as she's been doing with the Pfizer document release, for example.
First of all, you're absolutely right that there is what I'm calling conservatively a baby die-off in reported in at least three countries. And the BBC coverage of the Scottish babies dying is actually soft-pedaling what's really happening. The rates of neonatal deaths in Scotland have doubled. You had 86 babies dying in Ontario, Canada, when the baseline is 5 or 6. And in Israel, there's been a 34% rise of babies dying to vaccinated mothers as opposed to unvaccinated. And what I want to stress is that the spike in baby deaths and neonatal deaths is in 2021, when those countries were heavily vaccinated. You're also right that I've got 3,000 researchers, highly credentialed researchers, going through the Pfizer documents right now, RNs, doctors, research scientists, biostatisticians, medical fraud investigators, and what they're finding is the mechanism by which babies are dying. And also in the Pfizer documents, there's terrifying statistics.
So again, Pfizer leads the way in terrorizing the world. The neonatal death rate on the up is something to be very scary about, isn't it?
Well, Mike, that's the sort of thing that you would think would really startle people or jolt people out of their complacency, would really make people sit up and wake up. I mean, Naomi Wolf, I read her piece this week, and she just came out and called it a genocide. Mm. She just plain put it out there. It's a genocide. And it wasn't just in the context of the neonatal births, but it, like she said in that excerpt that you played, you know, she's got a lot of people on the case pouring through those FISA documents and, you know, finding just horrendous detail inside those documents that these people knew all about, obviously. Mm. And for 2.5 years now, you know, over 2 years anyway, since they first started producing the vaccines, although I suspect these guys were actually working on these vaccines before COVID really hit, because they were, you know, they'd planned this before. We all know that, and the evidence is out there for that. But be that as it may, they've known this for at least 2 years since the initial trials, the clinical trials, from which all of this data has come, and all of the data now that Naomi Wolf and her people and various other people are looking into. And, you know, this is the thing I've said before, will it take the deaths of kids for people to wake up? But this takes it even further than that. You know, we're talking about, you know, deaths of babies that haven't had the injection. But we're talking about those whose mothers, the kids whose mothers had the injection, and kids are actually dying from that injection. Now, that's a whole different kettle of fish altogether. That's a whole different ballgame. You would really think that something like that is going to wake people up. But herein lies the rub. Do enough people get to hear about that? That's the question, Mike. We're back down to that propaganda and censorship thing. This is startling information for sure. And if that sort of information was able to get out there in front of people on a consistent basis, eventually people would have to go, hang on, we've got to stop these. You know, Naomi Wolf is amongst many of the people who are actually calling outright, people like Judy Weilerman and various others. They're calling for a complete halt to the vaccination program. I mean, these people were calling out for this months back, but they're still out there pushing the vaccinations with no sign in sight that there's no sign or signal from our governments or our medical authorities they have any intention of stopping this program, neonatal deaths notwithstanding, or anybody else's adverse events notwithstanding. It's just an absolute criminal genocide. I agree, and it's happening right under our noses. And this is what really, you know, frustrates the hell out of me and many others who, like yourself, who are looking into this and just wondering where it's all going to end.
Yeah, Tim, where do you think it will end?
I don't know if it will end anytime soon, because we've got, you know, these people continuing to push these narratives, and the answer as to why they're doing it is simply because they can do it. People are sleeping, and
exactly
they're
right.
And they're not going to wake up anytime soon, unless, you know, I actually don't have an answer to that. I don't know when that would happen. People are sleeping.
Look, Tim, sorry, I didn't mean to cut in. I would totally agree. And until the media. And we do get occasional signals that some media are picking up on some of the problems, but they're picking up on the way the actual COVID thing was managed. Not many of them seem to be actually picking up on the things like adverse events or reports such as the Naomi Wolf thing regarding neonatal deaths. They're not picking up on the big story. You know, it's all about how the actual COVID how the COVID pandemic was actually handled and managed, but nobody's really picking up on that other story. In other words, the implicit acceptance on those who are actually writing about the issues and problems with COVID is that they're talking about the problems in the management of COVID. They're not talking about these other issues. And I agree with Tim that when you look at it like that, it's very difficult to sort of see at what point in time we're going to get this collective awakening.
Yeah, I just, here's another one, actually made the mainstream news or the legacy media in Canada. In Toronto, a doctor is facing no professional discipline after admitting to giving the COVID-19 vaccine to at least 500 kids as young as 6 months old, despite the shot not being approved for children under the age of 5. According to the Toronto Star, Dr. Christopher Sun from Western Mount Dennis stands by his decision and says he claims he did it to save and protect children. Now, Toronto Public Health informed the doctor to stop vaccinating kids under the age of five, and Sun was reported to the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario. Despite being reported, he continued to vaccinate that age group until the month's end and is facing zero retribution. He can just walk away and go, oh, well, I did what I thought I should. That's a sign, though. That's in the mainstream media. Nothing has been said about it. No one cares. Terrible state of affairs, isn't it?
You can imagine if he'd prescribed ivermectin or something like that, he would have lost his license.
Probably. He would have. And a lot safer.
Yeah. Well, of course, that's the other irony, of course. But, I hadn't actually heard that particular story. Mm. But you have to wonder, is he the only example of a doctor that has kind of broken the rules as such and has gone further than they actually were required to do? We know of doctors who've, obviously stood up to the system and said, hey, no, hang on, we need to stop this. We know plenty of people like that, and they're out there sort of fighting the good fight. But if my understanding of, and having sort of looked into the medical profession, is that the majority of them still buy the narrative, the majority of them are still pushing the vaccinations as being, the panacea for sorting this pandemic out. And until and unless, and I've said this again before, until and unless we get a critical mass awakening within the medical establishment, and we get that same awakening happening at the same time in the media, then our politicians will not do anything. It really has got to come back down to a collective and mass awakening within the medical profession itself. I don't see that happening, Mike, honestly, because I think it's really got to come from the medical and the scientific establishment. And, given all of the evidence that's out there now, particularly the results of trials, the trial data and all of the information that's coming out about that, and yet nobody is asking the questions, the right questions. And nobody is sort of, putting up red lights and saying, hang on a minute, guys, we've got a problem here. We need to do something about it. They're not doing that.
No, they're not. We've got 4 minutes to go. I'll play this because I went hunting. We put our newsroom to its best resources, put them away from the glass of Chardonnay and the prawns in the background, and I got them working, and they found our favourite CEO, CEO Albert Bueller.
And I wanted to add that I think we will. I think one thing it is Pfizer's portfolio is broad, but doesn't cover all diseases. I'm certain that the other pharmaceutical companies will follow. I've spoken to several of the CEOs, and they want to be part of it. So medicines will be available, I hope, but it's not going to be enough. I think we need also to work on the ground for diagnosis, treatments. Someone should write the prescriptions of these highly sophisticated medicines. And for that, I repeat, we need the help of WHO, of Doctors Without Borders, of many other organizations that can come. Bill Gates' organization, for example, has been fundamental for us to help through Gavi and through other means distribute vaccines to the world so far. And as Bill said, hundreds of thousands of lives have been saved because of that. We can do way more. And I think we should all come together with one goal. How to make sure that the modern wonders of medicine, which are the medicines, are finding their way to everyone. And I commit that we will actively seek these partnerships and engagements with all organizations that I just mentioned.
So there you are. There's our favorite CEO, Albert Bueller. And he says the wonders of medicine. What he actually means is the wonders of gene therapy. Isn't that about right?
Yeah, pretty much. And the wonders of big profits.
And Bill Gates and WHO and Pfizer, they're all part of that cartel.
Absolutely. And it is a cartel. I call it the cartel from hell. And, it's reached a point where it's reached the point where we've got a situation, Mike, that, like I said earlier on, until and unless we get the medical profession themselves, who have been co-opted by the pharmaceutical companies, we know where this came from. Mm. And so, you know, I don't really know where it's going to end here until we get that the medical establishment themselves standing up and saying, hey, look, this is where we're at. I don't see any resolution to this problem anytime soon.
Now, before we go, we've got 10 seconds. Somebody wants to find out more about you, illustrious you. How do they do that?
Just go to my Substack page, Greg Mabry. Substack.com.
Greg Mabry, always a pleasure. Thank you for the last minute effort to appreciate it. This is TNT Radio.